And our special guest tonight, Stephen Quayle. His website, Steve Quayle, Quayle.com, is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Lots more to talk with Stephen about later on this hour. We're going to talk about giants. We're going to get into the apocalypse. And also, I'd like to get Steve's take on the Vatican coming out a few days ago saying the ETs are our brothers. Stephen, what's your take on the Vatican coming out and saying that, you know, there could be extraterrestrial life, and if there is, it doesn't mean that there's not a God. What do you think about all that?
Well, I think it's priming the pump, so to speak, because, listen, the Vatican has its own intelligence sources. They have their own observatories, one at Castle Gandolfo outside of Rome, and then they have, obviously, the one in Arizona. Malachi Martin, when he was alive, was talking about the whole situation. This alien, keeping the aliens quiet, keeping all of the extraterrestrial stuff secret, you know, when it was a matter of national security, it was one thing. But when it's a matter of deceiving the whole world, it's the other. I believe that, obviously, to deal with the fallen angel aspect, you know, George, one of the things I've talked about a lot with you is the Book of Enoch and some of the what are called the pseudepigraphal works, the old writings from of old. Enoch was one of the guys. There's only two guys in the history of the world, according to the Bible, that have never died. One of them is Enoch, and the other is the Elijah.
Right.
And Enoch and Elijah are believed to be the two witnesses that come back to earth and literally testify against the Antichrist, who is a person. It's also a spirit and also a system. But the point is that the Catholic Church is more than prepped with all the secret stuff going on, because they themselves have a lot of the ancient antiquity hidden away. Most of the early church fathers, by the way, the guys that were the fathers of the faith, Origen, Polycarp, Justin Martyr, etc., believed in the fallen angels, the ones, and when I say fallen angels, these are angels that rebelled against God. Angels were meant to stay in heaven. They left heaven. They came to earth. They cohabited with earth women. They produced the mighty men of renown. All the world's mythological and belief systems center around this. Yet, for so many, they couldn't handle that, and the Book of Enoch was kept out of so many people's perusing or their ability to read it, because it presented the fact that we are not only living on a planet as human beings, creating the image of image and likeness of God, fallen as it may be through sin, but the bottom line is that there really are entities, and these entities are at war with God and his people. And it's kind of like when a person gets mad at, you've seen the classic Hollywood portrayal, a woman's got a picture of her jilted lover, her husband or her former husband, boyfriend, whatever, and when she gets mad at him, she takes the picture either out of the frame and tears it up, or she throws the frame with the glass on the ground. You've seen it. It's a classic
yes.
Hollywood scene. Well, that's the same thing the devil's doing with the image of God. And that's why when you take into this genetic Armageddon, since you and I first start talking about that, not a day goes by, the biggest newspapers in the world, the biggest magazines in the world are all talking about combining animal and human DNA. Have you noticed that?
Yep.
And it's almost fascinating, because I can almost bring the listeners to a show we did 2 years ago. And from that point on, it was like, I'd almost say this, that by divine providence, we let some of the genies out of the lamp, so to speak.
I think we did too, Stephen.
Yes, and I think that basically it got ahead of them. It used to be whenever you and I would talk about giants, immediately the History Channel would say, oh, they're dinosaur bones, blah, blah, blah. But I want you to know that some of the biggest expeditions in the world are going on right now, not only in search of the giants, but remember when the British team got lost in Mexico in the caves of Mexico, and that was on the mainstream press, and then it just kind of disappeared?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's all over this kind of stuff we're talking about, and maybe that'd be a good point to segue. What they want from not only the DNA of the giants that are dead, and some of these are mummified, but they want they want that part that can supercharge what they believe were the Übermensch or the Supermen. Same thing that Hitler sent the Ahnenarbe. That was a specific group in the SS that went all over the world looking for the Grail, the chalice at the Last Supper, the Spear of Longinus, which Hitler did get, and all the different things. They were looking for, if you were the ultimate group of warrior kings. And so the fascinating thing about this whole thing is that now you've got 50 years into the future technology now, and listen, it's gone way beyond what anybody knows. If they admit to even some of the things that they're admitting to now, What could you imagine they've done if we're 50 years ahead? And by the way, according to some of the people that have contacted me, and because why do people contact me? This is a good time to make a point. Because when you and I are talking about it, it's just like I know you get a lot of emails and people say, George, you need to look at this, you need to look at that. But when you can get two or three independent verifications from people who have no association with each other, that are different former intelligence, current or active duty military, scientists, mostly running for their lives, or when you've talked to people that have been involved in the alien phenomena, i.e. Phil Schneider, and then he ends up murdered, they claim it's suicide, or the Washington, D.C. madam, amazing.
Oh, another suicide.
Another suicide, or all the scientists suicided. The point is that obviously it's got to be so apparent, so in everyone's face, that there is a group, the ones you just identified, I've been identifying, we all talk about, that want to keep this stuff secret, because by keeping it secret, they can take advantage of their knowledge to control and destroy. I tell everybody, you can always answer every question you have by who wants to control what. If you control food, it was Rothschild that said, give me control of a nation's currency and I care not who writes its laws. And I would even go one step further. You get control of the world's food and you decide who lives or dies. That's why the globalists have made their Noah's Ark for seeds in Svalbard, Norway. You've heard about that, The giant seed bank. Well, what do they know? They know, you brought up the asteroid, they know exactly what's coming.
It's protection for the planet. They've got to do it.
Right. But they also know that a lot of people are going to die. That's why they have their underground bases. That's why they have their underground places. And by the way, that's why the ancients, probably one of the best kept secrets in the world, is all of the underground civilizations that have existed, and some of them still do exist. You know, the question I get answered or asked more than any, are there still live giants? And you know, I read on your show the letter I got from a pilot that flew out a dead 12-foot giant out of Afghanistan.
Yeah, that was an incredible
right.
letter, Stephen.
And the deal is that, by the way, the reason he contacted me, his exact words were, my mom was listening to Coast to Coast with you and George on. I used to think you, Steve, were full of, something. And he told me I was full of it. But he said, until I was ordered to fly one of these things out. And the story goes basically that this giant had been encountered in the caves of Afghanistan. A special operations group went in. The giant killed them all, and then another special group of men without equal. I mean, there are super secret good guys in our government that fight the stuff that goes bump in the night, okay?
And they're great, great people.
They're great people. And by the way, there are some women that are absolutely astonishing. It's not just men, okay? And I got to tell you something. The stories, and I've said to some of them, I said, oh, please let me tell your story, because again, this gives people a hope, because there really are people out there, George, that are incredibly selfless. There are a lot of people that have died that, unfortunately, they get a flag and name mentioned only in the ceremonies of those who do the burying of them. And a couple of those individuals I have communicated with that are no longer here. But what's interesting, the majority of these guys, and for the record, they're not religious, but they really do love God, okay? And they recognize when they go into the caves, they go into the caverns, they go into realms that most people only think exist in science fiction. They know that what they're doing is they're fighting ultimate or penultimate evil. And this is not a science fiction movie. This is not a movie script plot. What it is it's reality. But we live in such a controlled and constrained environment where people just believe that what the talking heads, what they call the money honeys, money honeys, the ladies that seem to know a lot about economics, yet don't even know what a derivative is, or the others on Wall Street that just keep saying this is bottom. You know, this country's going to come to a standstill. When the airlines can no longer fly at $200 a barrel oil, where the trains won't run, where the planes won't fly, where the vehicles won't run. See, it's not even a question of cost. It's a question of availability. Chavez today made the statement that if the United States attacks him, do you see this? Oil goes to $500 a barrel.
Well, I'm not so sure we're going to attack him.
Well, no, but I'm just saying this, is that what I think it's got to be obvious to everybody, when you import the majority of your oil, you are vulnerable. And the thing is that vulnerability leads to shortages. And the shortages, I mean, I'm reading different blogs, I'm sure you are too. People are now looking at bicycles, but they need to look beyond the bicycles or the alternative to say, who is doing this and why?
Exactly. And Stephen, I've got to ask you this, because as we move toward a presidential election and a president who will leave office, there's a lot of rhetoric again about Iran. There's rhetoric about Iran and their nuclear program, you know, like it's unacceptable if they do it. What do you think could happen in the next few months leading up to the November election?
Well, there's a lot of talk that we're not going to even have a normal election. And I can see that, obviously. There's too much laws and too many new presidential decision directives and too many things in place for things to go wrong. As you know, the local war today is what President Bush said in Israel, and obviously Obama, Hillary, and Biden reacted pretty negatively along with a lot of the others. I don't think people recognize, George, the issue of Iran is it's the former Persian Empire. And what I think a lot of people would do well to go back and read the history of the Persian Empire, because it was the Medo-Persian Empire that destroyed Babylon.
Well, go back and look at the movie 300. You get a pretty good idea.
Well, again,
remember that?
Yeah, and actually, I've talked to the producer of that movie behind the scenes over some things, you know. And the thing is that the idea of a supernatural war being carried out through people, the prophet Daniel, probably the key to understanding. You asked me about the apocalypse. The key to understanding the Bible is that it interprets itself. It's called the law of first mention, okay? Well, the prophecies of Daniel are probably the most challenged, contested, but the most concise prophecies in the Old Testament that give you the key to understanding the prophecies in the book of Revelation. Saying all that, the fascinating thing about Daniel was that the key to Daniel, when the angel tells Daniel that the revelation is sealed up, Daniel, until the appointed time. I believe that you and I right now and all the listeners and coasts are living in the appointed time when those prophecies are being opened, okay?
It's an amazing time, Steve.
It's an amazing time, but it's also, Jesus used the word perilous, okay? And that word perilous is interesting. That means your life literally hangs in the balance.
Well, what's the old saying? The best of times, the worst of times? I think
right. Or the Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Well, what we're trying to do is provide people an understanding. Look at all the stuff going on. Now, is there a central thread that runs through it all? And you get right back to the giants. You get right back to genetic engineering. You get right back to this hatred of humanity. The Bible says God loved the world. The Bible says the devil hates the world. That's why he's called the destroyer of worlds. Calvin Miller wrote a great book called The Singer, The Song, and the Finale, and he calls the devil the world hater. And it's amazing how many people hate the world. You know, you go out, I go out, we go out into the woods, we go to the ocean, we see this incredible beauty, and you go, why do these people want to destroy it so bad? Why do they want to turn beautiful photographic blue skies with white clouds into this gray goo of chemtrail spraying? And the answer is because they want to change everything that God created and insert the imaginations of a very wicked fallen angel and his minions. That's my opinion. And people say, well, I don't believe that. Well, you will when you start to see the events taking place that there will be no natural explanation for. None.
Stephen, you do a great job. And, a lot of people think maybe you're an alarmist. I think you're more of an educator.
Well, I try to do that. And I tell people, George, my goal is to make people afraid. I do get the emails saying, you're scaring old ladies, you're scaring this. I got to tell you.
Scaring young people, too.
Yeah.
Not just
but I
old
tell
ladies.
People this. It is scary out there. If I report and you report, and we tell people what's in the headlines, if we tell people what's going on, you and I aren't generating the earthquakes. You know, I believe we know who is, and we're talking about those people. But when you tell people that the plagues, it wasn't enough to have the Black Death. It isn't enough to have the bubonic plague or anthrax. Now we got to have stuff that incredibly evil men are brewing, like Ebola and smallpox, Ebola pox. And we've got to have a Spanish flu, the 1918 Spanish flu. We've got to have that on steroids. So instead of having a 50% mortality, we get it up into the 80-90%. And you say, and people say, well, why will they want to do that? It's simple. They hate God, they hate his creation, and they believe they can do a better job. And if hatred is their motivation, they'll ultimately end up eating each other out of existence, just like the people that inhabited Easter Island.
Stephen, as we approach 2012 and we see these events unfolding, let me ask you, and you're going to be with us, by the way, that night, December 21st, 2012. It's a Friday night. You're invited on. And also, thank you for bringing us Douglas Hagman. He was just on First Hour with me talking a little bit about bin Laden or the lack of bin Laden, and you brought him to us. 2012, what do you think? Solar event? Some catastrophe? Moment of enlightenment? What's going to happen?
Well, I'd say all of the above. What's fascinating is that we've got the situation going on where so many, if this is truly the start of the beginning of sorrows, there are people that believe in a 7-year tribulation. There are people that believe in a 3.5-year tribulation. I believe in a 3.5-year tribulation, which would put us into about 2011, going into 2012. Then we're going to be in for the most dramatic period of time that's ever been known. Jesus said it this way. There's never been anything like it, nor will be again. And except for the elect's sake, and for the elect's sake, if those days weren't shortened, there'd be no flesh left alive. So it's kind of interesting because there are so many different things. The procession through the Milky Way is about 25,600 years. That comes up in 2012. The Ouroboros, the snake eating its tail. You've had Dave Flynn on your show before. The point is that we're dealing now with what the ancients could see. And by the way, of the entire realm of the heavens, the Bible says the heavens declare the glory of God and the earth shows forth his handiwork. The testimony of such an incredibly wonderful and a marvelous creation is written in the stars. Yet we also know from antiquity that great, great drama and destruction has been wrought upon the earth. Velikovsky, Worlds in Collision, when Emmanuel Velikovsky wrote that book, he was ridiculed because, and it's fascinating, because he basically took on the standard theme of his day, which was called uniformitarianism.
He's still ridiculed, unless, you listen to James McCanney and people who support his work.
Well, Velikovsky and Tesla, okay? I tell this story because I think it's so compelling. When Einstein was asked how it felt to be the smartest man in the world, his response was, "I'm not. Nikola Tesla is." And the Russians, just as an aside, Stan Dale literally went to Tesla's lab, et cetera, and he's got a fascinating story to tell. But the point is that seeing what Tesla physics has done, the Russians have really expanded and excelled in that realm. And even when the crazy guy, Vladimir Zhirinovsky, remember that guy used to be the most outrageous guy in Russia?
Yes.
He would talk about some of the weapons they had, and he wasn't kidding. There was a lot of bluster, but what we're dealing with now, George, I believe we're at full-scale weather wars, okay? Weather wars are taking place right now. Brzezinski, National Security Advisor, this wasn't a flake, okay? He made the statement that the time would come when nations would make war against nations using the technology available at that time. He said that in the late 70s, and they would blame it on acts of God, but it was a way for the people that wanted to make war and destroy their enemies to hide what they were doing.
Very fascinating. Stephen Quayle, Giants next. Indeed, indeed, with our dear friend Stephen Quayle. Next hour, I'll open up the phone lines for Stephen, but when we come back, time to talk about Giants. And welcome back to Coast, Stephen Quayle with us. Stephen, Giants, anything new in that arena?
Well, yeah, some major stories and breaking stories that are just pretty astonishing. A group of individuals that I've been in contact with, I talked to them in Europe 2 weeks ago, are basically looking for, you're going to love this one, the live giants that exist in a cave structure. And I'm not going to tell the island, but an underground island labyrinth. And what's fascinating, George, one of the ways I can tell when people have really encountered the real thing is I've stated on Coast before about Dr. Moldyshev's experience in the Himalayas with the monks showing him a live giant that's kind of in suspended animation. Well, a different group encountered a cave structure on an island in the South Pacific. By the way, it wasn't the Solomon Islands.
Or the island of Dr. Moreau.
Yes. And the fascinating thing is they could only go so far in before they said they felt like their heads were going to explode. Now, even the underground bases in the United States where some of these live giants are contained in very large, I guess you'd call them cages, there's a zone called the Red Line. You cannot go past the Red Line. The Red Line is an area that evidently the telepathic powers of these things are so great that it will literally kill you. And how I was told about that was about some gentlemen that I've referred to so many times that have to go in and clean up the messes, that people that don't believe that this stuff is more serious than it is. In other words, certain groups of military get into situations that they're not equipped or trained to deal with. They have to call in the real firepower, because it's a whole different world when you're fighting something that has a supernatural origin and fallen angels. The point being is that the group that was in the South Pacific in an underground labyrinth absolutely was able to validate, verify what the military has stated to me, what the experience that Dr. Moldyshev has written about, and all the other people. There's only about a half a dozen researchers doing what I would call, and I'm talking outside of the military and the secret government, but doing independent research, and we're always fighting them. The problem is when anybody gets a live, or let's just say this, any type of a mummified giant, of which southern Utah has got numerous giant finds, the point is that the men in black, literally, or they show up. Under the United States law, there's a thing called the Native American Antiquities Act.
What is that?
Basically, it means that anything that you find that's old and old bones are automatically assumed to be Native Americans, which in the case of the Kennewick man went to court because you have basically a red-haired Irishman of several thousand years ago that didn't fit the DNA profile of a Native American. So there are numerous laws, and I literally have listeners to your show that have called me and said they found when they were digging or plowing a field in the Ohio River Valley or Pennsylvania, and the minute they speak about it, somebody shows up and basically threatens them, and they take the stuff. By the way, one of the very first shows we did together, we were talking about the Lovelock giant that was in a little California museum. Within 2 weeks of us talking about it, that thing was gone. One of your listeners called me and said, you know that I went to that museum, and they acknowledged having it. They said some people from the government came and took it.
Took it away?
Yep, took it away. Now, let's go to the Grand Canyon, the Citadel in the Grand Canyon. What's fascinating is you'd think that something that's obviously in the desert Southwest would have desert Southwest names. But the fascinating story is a Smithsonian archaeologist, which, of course, a Smithsonian denies, found a giant Egyptian citadel. A citadel would be an underground, if you will, city in which there were massive mummified giants.
How big?
Anywhere from 12 to 14 feet.
God.
Those things were taken out of there, and one of your listeners called me and said, Steve, I was in those citadels. I was one of the guys that took them out, and he said they took them to Area 51, okay? Or S4. So the point is that it's kind of fascinating, because when you talk to the different people that are out there, you can go on my website and click on giants. By the way, I have a two-part website. The big Q brings into contemporary stuff we're talking about earlier.
Right.
The giants part of the website talks about ancient antiquity and all this stuff we're talking about. And George, I might say this. My books are not available at Amazon or anything. I sell them directly through my website. And I'm getting emails right now. How can we get your book on Weather Wars and on giants? May I give that out?
I thought you were Amazon. I guess you're not,
no.
Huh? Okay.
Interesting. I know that some of them show up there are secondary, and they cost way more than I sell them for. But, again, in the morning, during normal working hours, they can call this number, 719-547-9100. 719-547-9100. That's, you know, from 8 o'clock in the morning on. And then they can order them directly online. But the Weather Wars book is really critical, because a Weather Wars book is telling people what's going to happen. And what I did, I wanted to use that as a primer to enable people and help them to be able to understand what's going on, to take away the fear. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
If I can take away the fear factor and all the question marks, then I think it helps to motivate people to prepare, get ready, and to do practical, stuff. Obviously, if water is going to be scarce, and you're going to need to purify whatever water is there. If you're going to live on any of the coasts, given the tragic events that I see coming, you better have some way to desalinate water. Water filters don't desalinate. But there's practical stuff that people can do. And if the fear is taken away, fear has a tendency to paralyze and literally stop people in their tracks.
I guess people would be petrified if they saw giants, wouldn't they?
Absolutely. So why do you think I'm spending all this time by you talking and writing about this stuff? Because Jesus talked about the days of Noah. And I don't think people understand what the days of Noah, and that's not a religious cliche. It's not a Christian buzzword. That's a literal period when these things ruled the earth, you know, and it's fascinating that it doesn't matter. As you know, I literally track down what I know or what I'm made aware of, I track down. If I don't know it, obviously I can't track it down. But the point is that there are times where it becomes so in your face that these things are going to be released. Now, here's the thing. If people were to understand this, that when God gave men authority, men can use that authority to, in his power, have dominion over these things, or by the devil's power, loose these things. And the problem is the stargates that I'm talking about. Whenever you hear of nuclear reactors just seemingly all having problems at a very short period of time, someone in the military said that they're diverting the power to the gates. And for people that have seen the movie Hellboy, Hellboy basically starts out with the Nazis, and the Nazis were experimenting with what are called stargates or electromagnetic vortices. And as most people don't realize, that's like now almost, 60-year-old technology?
Yeah, so you imagine what they have today.
So you imagine what they have now. Let's bring it to the giants. The giants have, this is what I think is going to be really hard for people to grasp. Even the British Museum was talking about, because they had effective live DNA from Ramesses, you know, the Egyptian pharaoh, about reanimating him. And the point is that when Michael Crichton wrote Jurassic Park and Steven Spielberg produced, obviously, the Jurassic Park movies, people thought, well, that was really far out. Now just jump forward a few years, and what are they talking about doing? Reanimating woolly mammoths? Bringing back...
Yeah, they're working on that now, aren't they?
They've done it. See, when you hear that they're working on something, they've done it. And you brought up the doctor. I have literally seen grown men cry, and I'm talking about tough guys. I'm talking about guys that are literally what general said. These are the most dangerous men in the world, Steve. And I've seen and listened to them cry as to the some of the monstrosities they've seen. I'm not talking fiction now. Someone says, "Well, this stuff can't be real." It's very real, and that's why I'm trying to inform people that the days of Noah were so corrupt, so evil, the violence was wretched and wicked, and that's what we're coming back into, the days of Noah. And so while most people will look apocalyptically at, the weather, the waves, and everything, they leave out that really important part that Jesus spoke about. Jesus didn't lie, so if Jesus is saying, as in the days of Noah, so will it be in the time period coming up to the Son of Man. I get all the time, well, angels don't marry. Well, this has nothing to do with Mary. In heaven, they are neither given or taken in marriage, but when they left their estate, that means they were confined to a specific area, they came and polluted the human race. And I got to tell you, everything you see, everything you hear about transhumanism, I know you've had Ray Kurzweil on, singularity,
yep.
Everything is building to, if you will, the replacement of man or a something other than man. And you know that. You've interviewed him.
Sure.
So the other than man, it comes right back to the Übermensch of Nietzsche, comes right back to the Superman of Hitler, and it comes right back to the super soldier program of the Pentagon. And most people can't even grasp or wrap their minds around. There are so many. When you think you know 1,000 projects, there's the 1,001st. So things are getting way out of hand, and let's now go immediately to the giants. Most people don't recognize the fact that when you see ruins above ground, especially on the Giza Plateau, or you see them at Baalbek, which is Baalbek.
In Lebanon,
that there are whole underground civilizations that the giants built that are literally controlled by the governments. You see, this is a story that they don't want out. And so so they'll do everything they can to try and frustrate. One of the gentlemen I was going to try and get on the air with you was the guy Marius. He's the one that wrote the Solomon Island Giants.
Yes.
And I told you, it's my understanding that he was blowing up in the Fiji bomb that went off. And so the thing is that it's kind of fascinating. The last conversation I had with Marius on the telephone, and I don't think I've ever told you this, but we were trying to get him into California to meet with you with all of the different artifacts that he had acquired because he was married to a Guadalcanalese.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the nature of it, and he said, Steve, I've got basically everybody in Southeast Asia on my case right now. So if Marius is alive and listening to this, I'm going on information that was sent to me by someone who claimed to know him that he was blown up in that PG terrorist attack.
The Giants, Stephen, Goliath, for example, do you think he was a giant or just a tall guy from his time?
Well, first of all, he was a giant. One of the things that delineates the Giants in history are six fingers, six toes. And quite candidly, it's not a Hollywood interpretation. It said his spear was as large as a weaver's beam. And by the way, David, King David, he took five smooth stones because Goliath had four brothers. And the bottom line is that David wasn't only ready to take on one giant, he's ready to go for the family feud, if you will. So the thing that throughout the Old Testament, the giants were always of supernatural strength, and they were always bigger than life. Literally, in the Middle East, there are so many areas called the cities of the giant. And one of the biggest, this will find fascinating, just going how it ties in, words that we have in everyday language refer directly back to the time of the giants. For instance, Krakatoa. I mentioned Krakatoa,
yes.
The volcanic explosion in 1883. Well, one of the things I'm watching is what's called Anak, or A-N-A-K, Anak, Krakatoa. Anak comes from the Hebrew word Anakim, giants. And that's something that's fascinating. When you talk about Pele, the volcano goddess in the South Pacific, you can go directly to the different giants, Gog and Magog. Not only are they kings, and not only are they literal people, but the city of London has the giants Gog and Magog as, if you will, their patron giants. You know the word, the little birdie told me so?
Mm-hmm.
I think I've shared that. That's from the giant Bryn. His daughter was taken captive by the Irish, and the bird went to the giant and told. Whether this is folklore or not, what I'm telling you is so much has entered in to our vocabulary, words like colossal.
Well, do you think these giants were, a different species of humans or plotted down here from above?
No, they were the offspring of humans and human women and fallen angels.
And the Nephilim.
Yes, the Nephilim. And the fascinating thing about that is that now you've got what they used to do sexually. And I always get into this. People say, well, how can angels take on themselves physicality?
Physically, right. Which is a good question.
That is a good question. In the Old Testament, you even have the angels of God going into Sodom and Gomorrah to destroy it, being able to sit and eat with Abraham. And the discourse is between them. You've got the presence of angels. You've got Jacob wrestling with the angel of the Lord. By the way, he wrestled at the place that was literally called the gateway of the gods. So the point is that they can take on, they can morph themselves. Paul says that the devil himself can transform himself into an angel of light. There are people that have called me after your show saying, and I don't mean to be gross, but they've had sex with an incubus or a succubus. I don't dismiss them. An incubus and a succubus are the different forms. And somebody says, well, that's crazy. Well, interestingly enough, Marilyn Monroe had that experience. Jay Mansfield had that experience. And I won't name them now, but they're contemporary actresses in Hollywood that claim that have that experience. And I tell the actors in Hollywood, if you're doing that, better value your life and repent, because the history of that is not good. So all through recorded history, George, you have the intermingling of fallen angels. And see, again, I want to make this clear. Jesus said in heaven they are neither given or taken in marriage, but are as the angels. But when they got kicked out of heaven, I said this, and I don't know this to be the case, but God evidently clipped their wings, and they got confined. And this is why the intelligence that all of a sudden springs up in the Tigris-Euphrates or the cradle of civilization, you've got mankind not being basically a rock and hammer guys, you know, or rock and chisel guys, but you've got incredible intelligence all throughout the world. You have even in Australia, the caves of Australia. You've got the Wajina, as Standeo told me how to pronounce it, giant cave drawings of guys that look like they're in spacesuits. And everything that you see in even Native American sandstone or petroglyphs, you always have the giants being supersized, if you will. They're always taller. You've seen the Babylonian, and you've seen the different tablets where they'll show a king sitting on a throne, and the people come up to his knees. Well, that's not pygmies and a basketball-playing Babylonian king. These are the giants. The giants were worshipped as gods. And obviously, the thing that's fascinating is now you've got a group of people that have identified that genome. And I tell people there's nothing human about the Genome Project. Because if you know what everything is headed towards, it's headed towards the combining of animal and human DNA, making superhuman beings, or making something better than human beings, and that's where the word transhumanism comes in.
How many giants do you think are alive on this planet now?
Oh, brother, I can only tell you this. It is as one gentleman in the military who listened to my show the last time you and I spoke about this said, he said that you wouldn't believe the number. And I said, are we talking thousands? Are we talking tens of thousands? He said, in the natural realm, he said they, and this is something, they are in a state of stasis, okay? There are literally, and this is kind of going to be really hard for people to understand, but there are literally hives, and that's the special forces word for it, hives of these things in a form of suspended animation. And interestingly enough, they usually have a copper or a brass band on their wrist, on their neck, and on their feet with what's called Paleo-Hebrew, or the first language. And it's fascinating because when those things are taken off them, and don't ask, I can't even explain how this works, but the point is that they become reanimated. And this is something like you think, boy, who wrote that script? But basically, he said there are literally tens of thousands of them.
Stephen, your website, can people email you straight through to the website?
Yes, they can. And my email address is on the website. And again, my books are only available either through the website or calling that number.
Next hour, we'll take phone calls. Just about anything goes. We'll talk about the apocalypse, earth changes, giants. You've heard it. One quick question, very quick. If we come into the point where we need massive preparedness, what do you recommend for currency? What are we going to use?
Well, I think the thing that people can look at is obviously they're going to have to be thinking barter, because even during the Great Depression, it wasn't money so much because it wasn't anything. It's having stuff that people will need and that every man needs. And gold and silver are a way to protect the diminishing power of the dollar. But food, obviously, barter items.
Barter, so maybe stock up and then barter. We'll be back with Stephen Quayle. We'll take your phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM.